2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Nice to have you back, and thanks for listening again this week. Man, have we had our share of snowfall over the past week. At one point, and this was before the last round of storm activity, we had 6 feet in 6 days. More than that up there now, and I'm sure it's stirring some concerns for avalanche dangers. We had a mess up Little Cottonwood Canyon this past week, which we already talked about. But let's check in here with the Utah Avalanche Center and say good morning to Craig Gordon.
Hello, hello.
I cannot imagine that somebody would still be hankering for a snow day because you've had more than your share. It's been like an every other day thing for the last week to 10 days. But no complaints here and no complaints from many people. And among those are those that, of course, live and work at our beautiful resorts here in Utah, including Deer Valley, where Emily Summers happens to check in with us a couple of times during the year, every year. Emily, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. We were at the resort last week. Four of us came up, and I don't know any other way to describe it than just ego snow for those that know the term, because it was one of those days when every turn was just a simple and comfortable move, and the snow was fantastic.
Yeah, we're having a great season again, and the coverage, I mean, we all are aware of how much snow Utah's getting, and the coverage just fantastic.
Yeah. I was looking at the ski report a couple of days ago, and it said a 60-inch base with four new in the last 24. Of course, there's more on top of that here on Saturday morning. But anyway, just plenty up there, and the coverage, as you mentioned, is really, really good. Anybody that hasn't been up to the resort this year, are there some things they will notice different or just same old best resort in the world?
Well, yeah. One big change for Deer Valley, not a big change in the industry overall, but Deer Valley went to digital ticketing and an RFID system.
Right.
So we have direct-to-lift product now. So many of our products, Icon Pass, Season Passes, day tickets, they go straight direct-to-lift. So eliminating that stop at the ticket office. And then we have gates at the lift, so keeping that pass product in your pocket by itself, and then that gate will open and let you on the chairlift.
Yeah, the Icon Pass included, right? You just go straight to the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. I also experienced something that I had never done before, and I probably shouldn't even mention it, but with the crowds that have been headed to our resorts over the past little while, I found a little kept or a well-kept secret, maybe, on the Jordanelle side, where you can have some parking and get on a gondola to take you up on the mountain and maybe avoid some of what happens at the base.
Yeah, and as we go into Sundance Film Festival, that is a good tip. But again, you'll want to be on the early side. There is limited parking kind of everywhere. But yeah, that is kind of our side door or corridor into Deer Valley where you don't have to go through town.
Well, and the other advantage of that, obviously, is that you'll probably find some powder early in the morning that people haven't yet gotten to if they're coming up from the base of the mountain. But Deer Valley, just unbelievable this year. All of our resorts are doing so well. And coming on the heels of last year's World Championships, you're about to what we call getting back to normal, but for most resorts would be a nightmare, and that is putting on the best World Cup events anywhere.
Yeah, it's our 22nd year of a competition of this caliber. And yeah, we were kind of joking, going back to normal. So it's just a World Cup, which is a funny thing to say, but it is a World Cup again this year. It's freestyle skiing. Three nights of competition. We'll have moguls, aerials, and dual moguls again this year.
Is there any place on the planet that has put this event on more than Deer Valley?
I have no idea, but this is a long time running, and the athletes look forward to it. We hear about it all the time. It's one of the most anticipated stops on the circuit, and I do believe it's the only domestic stop this year. So the athletes, this is a really important place for them. This is where their family and friends can come see them. A lot of them are from here, so it's kind of a homecoming event, and it should – they always kind of – race a little harder here.
Yeah, no, they do. They love it, and it does feel like home. And boy, when you get the hometown crowd behind you, they certainly hear it as they get ready to make their runs down the courses there. I noticed that Intermountain Healthcare was added to it this year. Is that a new sponsor?
That is. They have sponsored it before, but it is a new title sponsor. So a little bit longer of a name, a little bit different when you hear us referring to it. It's Intermountain Healthcare Freestyle International World Cup this year. So just a little bit of a different name, and thanks to Intermountain for being a title sponsor.
This is, I think anyway, the most exciting form of the sport, and we're talking freestyle World Cup here, where you get mogul competition, but then you get the aerial competition and what everybody loves, and I notice you've put it on a Saturday night this time, the dual mogul competition, where they really push themselves to the limit because they've got somebody right in their side view mirror.
Yes, that is absolutely the crowd favorite. Not only is that course the champion ski run, it was used in the 2002 Olympics here at Deer Valley. Not only is that course one of the longest and steepest that the mogul athletes will see all year, but when you put them head-to-head, they ski it like you would not believe. We're all holding our breath, and they come down and throw the biggest tricks at the craziest speeds, and it's really the crowd favorite.
Yeah, and you know they push it as far as they can when they're in the Olympics, but when you've got somebody side-by-side with you, you end up sort of getting in that head-to-head competition thing, forgetting about anything else in the world, and it tends to push them even a little bit farther than maybe sometimes they want to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think last year we all saw tricks that were going so big, and the video went viral, and we had a Japanese competitor who had to throw a double just to get out of the trick, and it was show-stopping.
Yeah.
It was an amazing race.
Men's and women's will be taking place mm-hmm. Thursday. It gets started Thursday, February 6th, with the mogul competition, both men's and women's. The aerial competition, men's and women's, comes up on Friday night, and for those that have never seen it, it's one thing to watch it on television. It's another thing to stand there at the base of that jump and watch the things they do in the air and still land it. That still boggles my mind that you could do all those twists and turns and flips and then land back on your skis.
That absolutely. The first year I saw it in person, I couldn't believe how different it was from watching on TV. And just to reiterate, it is free to spectators. This is something that you can just come up. Parking's free. Access is free. Come up and watch these athletes just put on an incredible show.
It's a little bit of a hike up the hill, but you can see it from the parking lot. And you also have a couple of different ways to get people up there. You can jump on the lift, which will take you more than halfway there.
Yes. So you'll want to give yourself extra time. Most of the finals, the full schedule is on DeerValley.com, and most of the finals start around 6 or 7 p.m. Giving yourself an arrival time of about an hour prior will give you plenty of time to park and take the walk up the hill at your own pace. We do suggest being in your full snow gear, snow boots, sturdy shoes. If you have a yak track or anything you can put on the bottom of your shoes, that's helpful too.
By the way, we want everybody to be safe on the way down after the event, and there's usually fireworks after. I'm going to guess that's part of it again this year, too.
Yes, awards and fireworks happen every night of the finals.
But my next point was that people have some fun getting down off the mountain after the event is over, as long as you can do it safely and not bother anybody else that's trying to get down to their vehicle.
Yeah, we encourage staying upright, but yeah, there is a nice pedestrian path that will get you back down there.
But you can only encourage so much to go so far.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Deer Valley, always great. And year after year, and I think this was another one where it was recognized, if not the best, then right there in the top two or three in the world.
Yes, we were honored for the seventh year in a row as best U.S. resort in World Ski Awards.
How about that? No surprise to those that love to ski there. I'll look forward to seeing you up there soon. Emily Summers, Deer Valley. Again, the dates of the Intermountain Healthcare Freestyle International Ski World Cup is February 6th through the 8th. Make the plans to take your family up there and make a weekend of it. Enjoy the competition. Great talking with you, Emily. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll take a break, come back, and finish out the program for another week. Stay right there.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
As we get ready to wrap the show up this week, I was scanning through my Facebook page the other day and ran across some pictures that I was a little jealous of, to be honest with you, about a trip up to the Monte Cristo yurt. And it was from an old friend of ours on the show, Lori Lee, who we used to tap all the time to talk about snowshoeing in Utah. She knows a little something about yurts, too, and has written books on both of those subjects and joins us for the first time in a while. First of all, let me say happy birthday to you.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. Let's not talk about that.
Yeah. I wasn't going to ask which one it was. I was just going to say happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. What have you been up to since we last chatted? Besides heading out to yurts, I hear you're in real estate these days.
Well, you know, I have been for 12 years, so I'm a realtor who likes to play outdoors.
There you go. And still looking for that perfect piece of land somewhere. Or maybe you're going to buy or build a yurt somewhere.
Well, you know, I was actually... usually what I do is I go and visit the yurts. They're these great backcountry motels. And I'm surprised at how many people don't know what a yurt is. So maybe we should start with that.
Yeah, let's start there. Go ahead and explain it.
Okay. So for those of you who aren't familiar with yurts, it's like a modern adaptation of an ancient shelter. So it was a nomadic shelter used in Mongolia in Central Asia. And there are these big round tents that are portable. Most of them have these accordion lattice walls, but they would use them as they would move across the steppes. And now what we use them for is basically these backcountry motels that we put back in wonderful places, either because we want to ski backcountry and have a place to, you know, camp that night or snowmobile back to. Lots of them are being used in the summer now also for, you know, just a kind of a rough shelter. Some of them are getting really advanced now, kind of doing the whole glamping feel, but they're a recipe for adventure, really, is what they are.
Yeah, and it's sort of pack in and pack out, is it not, with most, if not all, of these?
Yes, absolutely. There's a couple of them that you can drive to, and depending on the time of year, if you're visiting in summer or winter, summer obviously usually have a little better access. But across the board, I would say, in general, most of them I've had to pack into. So, you know, you pack up your backpack and put on your cross-country skis or your backcountry skis or your snowshoes and head back for a few days.
When you first compiled the information, and by the way, I'm looking at your website, which is yurtsofutah.com. When you first researched this and put this together, I think you mapped out about 30 yurts. But since the book has come out, some of these are no longer in service. So I wanted to focus on just a handful that maybe people might consider. And a best place to start might be where you were most recently, up at Monte Cristo.
Ooh, let's talk about that.
How hard is it to get to?
You know, I originally was going, it's about 6.5 miles back in from the trailhead, and I was originally going to snowshoe. Then we found some friends that had snowmobiles, and so we were like, awesome, let's just put a sled on and pack all our food and gear in on the sled, and that made it super easy. So, you know, you can make it as hard or as easy as you want. There's also, at the Monte Cristo trailhead, there's a great big snowmobile rental that's like right there too. So you can, if you don't have your own snowmobiles, you can just rent them right there on the spot. But so here's the thing. On the snowmobile, it took us probably 20 minutes to get back in. You do generally with all of these yurts need to have some navigation skills.
Okay.
GPS, print off the maps. And when you make your reservations with the yurt owners, they will supply that information for you. And you need to go prepared. If you're going into the backcountry where there's been a lot of snow, then you're going to want to be prepared with beacons and shovels and know how to use that kind of avalanche gear to keep yourself safe. But if you're not going into those avalanche areas, you can just prepare for a great night of heating up a wood stove and making some fun food and playing games around the table with your buddies, and it's a good time.
Yeah, it just sounds like a great way to unplug and get away from technology for a while. You may have answered one of my questions. I was wondering how you avoid, you know, not bumping into somebody else that's already there to call it a night. But there is a reservation system on some of these, or most of these, I would guess.
All of them, yeah. So the vast majority of these, there are some sets like the Ashley National Forest Yurts, and Big Water Yurt is also managed by the National Forest. These types of yurts are managed by National Forest, but most of them are owned independently.
Oh.
And so with Yurts of Utah, what we've done is with the yurts that are involved, we have pages that give you the location. So if we're looking at the Rocky Ridge Outpost Yurt, for example, this is in Flaming Gorge. It tells you that to drive to the yurt is 5 miles south of Manila. It tells you the elevation. It tells you the yurt size. So this particular yurt is a 24-foot yurt. It has one queen bed and two queen futons and two twin mattresses, so you can sleep like eight people. You can take eight people in. Yeah. And this one that's in Flaming Gorge, you can actually drive to. They've got some other cabins and things around it. It's one of the more glamping experiences as compared to the backcountry ones. But on the site, Yurts of Utah, it's got, you know, it introduces the yurt, it tells you the season and who you need to contact for reservations. And then each of those yurt owners have, you know, liability forms that you sign, and they send you the maps once you've made the reservations, all that kind of thing. And, you know, I would say to the listeners, if you hop on Yurts of Utah and you see a yurt on there that you want information to, and the yurt owner hasn't released that to me as the owner of yurtsofutah.com, you know, suggest to him that they do, so that we can put more information up so that
there
we can collect it all.
Yeah, this Rocky Ridge Outpost yurt is listed as a nomad yurt. Is that just a reference to the style?
I want to say yes. I can't remember why I put that.
Okay. That's, you know what? That's an honest answer. I appreciate that. There's another one at Soldier Summit that's not too far from home that people may want to check out. And that one is Spanish Fort Canyon, right near Schofield State Park, about an hour from Provo. I've seen that one. And that one looks...
And that one, yeah, it's not even too far to get into. It's like a mile and a half one way.
Yeah. So that one's one of the easier ones to get to. We never have enough time to sort all of this out. We have less than a minute here. But overall, what would you tell people about experiencing yurts maybe for the first time? And do you enjoy the winter visits or the summer visits better?
You know what? I enjoy all of them. I'll just be honest with you, Tim. They're each an adventure. I think you need to go prepared. If you're going out to a yurt for the first time, they're pretty popular. And so I would say plan in advance to make your contact with the yurt owners and reserve the date that you want. And then, you know, be prepared, do some homework ahead of time so that once you're sent the map that you have some GPS points and you've, you know, put them in your GPS, you put your waypoints in your GPS and you know how to get there. And then usually you're expected to do a little bit of upkeep at the yurt. So if it's in the winter, you shovel off the deck and, you know, you make sure there'll probably be chopped wood for you when you get there. But, you know, before you leave, you fill up the wood bin, or, you know, it's kind of a everybody helps out kind of thing, even though you're renting it.
Yeah.
So just go with that community feeling of adventure and help and preparation, and you'll have a wonderful time. And each of these yurts really have different personalities, and they give you access to different things. So look through them and decide, you know, what kind of adventure you want to have and which part of the state you want to see and check out. Lots of great stuff in Utah.
Well, I've always enjoyed your adventurous spirit and your riding skills. You should also check out, by the way, Lori's book on snowshoeing, Snowshoe Utah. And that has a website attached to it, just snowshoeutah.com. Tell them how do they get a hold of you for buying or selling homes. Let's do that.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com. Or wherever you get your podcasts.